Welcome. You're listening to the Internet Advisor Podcast with your co-hosts, Gary Baker, Foster Brown, and their team of experts. Since 1998, this program has been helping people like you with your computer problems, introducing you to valuable resources and programs, and promoting tech businesses in our area. The Internet Advisor is a two-hour radio program heard weekly on WJR 760 AM in Detroit and across the state on the Michigan Talk Network. Now, here are your hosts with this week's Internet Advisor.
Welcome to the Internet Advisor, your place for answers to your computer questions since 1998, with your co-hosts Gary Baker and Foster Brown and their team of tech experts. The door is always open at InternetAdvisor.net, on Facebook, and through Twitter. But right now it's time to get you in touch with your helpful hosts on this week's edition of Internet Advisor.
Welcome to the Internet Advisor. Thank you for making us part of your day, traveling in the car, around the house, wherever you may be. Delighted to have you with us. We've got some very good things for you to listen to today. We're going to be talking with some folks about alternative energy sources for all those lovely devices that are gobbling up more and more electricity. The best part about these alternative sources is that they won't put tons of noxious fumes in the air for us to breathe for generations to come and punch holes in our atmosphere. We'll also be talking with Richard Steenen about a brand new virus. Well, it's always a lovely day in the neighborhood here when we have our posse gathered around and we have a full crew today. So let me introduce ourselves. I'm Foster Brown, the co-host of the program. With me, the gentleman who's been here from the beginning, Mr. Gary Baker.
It's a pleasure to be here still. After 16 years.
It is. And, you know, the topics we're looking at today to talk about, you know, they change, but it's been an incredible luge ride for us, hasn't it? Faster and faster.
If it were all downhill, it'd be great.
Yeah. And this is kind of picking up speed, however. And with us, back from the city of, Sin, Sand, and Secrets, Lost Wages, Las Vegas.
You know, that was a great time. My wife and I hadn't gone on a vacation in years, and that's one of the cheapest vacations you could go on. Little too long. One thing I didn't get to mention before we went on vacation is someone had one of those, not the FBI virus, but it was like the bogus spyware.
Or
bogus antivirus. Ransomware. Ransomware. Thank you. It was nasty to remove, and I had to use various techniques to get rid of it. But when I got done, because I went back several times, I usually don't like charging my wife's friends and stuff like that. And she goes, no, I want you to take this. I know you're going to Las Vegas and put it on some slot machines for me.
I love it.
So I got to play, you know, a little bit of virus money there. Someone else's money. That was even better.
You were putting virus money in machines?
Those machines, yeah. They didn't know how to take it.
Playing with bitcoins, huh?
And if people could see Cal's expression on his face.
We got to get video here.
Okay, we got it, yes.
Oh, what was that Cal look about Cal Carson?
I'm overwhelmed and just, I'm happy as hell to have you back. my worst fear was someone asked me a Windows question.
while you were gone.
Of course, I always have an answer for that that works really well, though. Well,
get a Mac.
Buy a Mac. We've heard it.
Yeah. Hey, and if you're going to be buying anything, it looks like coming next year, you're going to have to be using a different credit card or debit card because after that debacle with Target, and you kind of wonder why this hasn't happened sooner, it was just announced this last week that both Visa and MasterCard are going to be switching to a system with a brand new card. It's called Chip and Pin. The cards will look the same.
Sounds like golf.
It does. Chip up at it into the pin. The chip is embedded in the card, and it has the special ID codes, and all the information is on there, I guess.
Yeah. Now,
they've been using them a lot of places else in the world.
Oh, everywhere. Pretty much everywhere else. Right. You go to Canada. I went to Canada this spring, and they were all chip and pin.
It's a little four-digit PIN number you put in.
Yeah, and which you can change if you want. And so you can't get to the information on the chip without the PIN, and that's the safety feature
now,
of it.
Now, Gary, will they also accept the technology where you have a different PIN every time you use it, and you have a little card, and you tear it off, and that's the PIN I'm using this time?
You know, that would be great if they would do that.
Because
we talked about that
a few years ago, didn't you?
Yes, absolutely.
You can change the PIN continually. That's your access point, they say.
That makes some sense. Yeah. However, let me ask this. Mm-hmm. You know, we've said many times, don't use your debit card. right? Except for at your own bank, preferably at your own bank. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, with credit cards, they're protected. If somebody gets a hold of your credit card and they do commit fraud or whatever, the credit card company will protect you. On many banks, however, you know, your bank account, the whole balance could be gone. And even if they do finally restore it, the money's gone for a while, yeah. And it makes it very inconvenient. So I've told everybody that I know not to use your debit card, but just use your credit card. Do you guys think that if you have a PIN now, if a PIN number, would that make it better?
I think that's what's going to be universal. Well, on my card at the bottom it says debit card because I don't have a credit card. And it says in it that it's debit card. I find that practically speaking, for instance, this week, because with the repairs of my car, I had to get a Hertz rental car. Mm-hmm. They took the debit card.
Oh, I'm sure they'll take it.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
The point. The point is they'll take it.
But it's not as insured as...
But it's not... Right. But people could, if they can get hold of that number,
yeah,
they can empty your bank account, yeah, as opposed to just charge your credit,
yes,
card,
yes,
of which the credit card company protects you.
Right. Well,
the banks, even when some, and most banks now will say, if we can prove it, yes, we'll go ahead and restore the money back, yeah, into your account. Yeah. It takes a long time to do it.
Foster, just I wanted to clarify. With a debit card that has like a Visa or a MasterCard logo on it, you can run that through a machine as a MasterCard without a PIN. That's where the problem comes in. And they can clean out your account, yeah, without the PIN, and it's not as insured.
So I guess the benefit will be...
But that's only if you select the credit option. If you,
but
you
if someone gets a hold
debit
of your
option,
card,
you have to have to use a PIN.
If someone gets a hold of your wallet,
yeah,
right? And they get a hold, they could run your debit card that says MasterCard or Visa through and forge your signature, and you may not get your money back. That's
well, most businesses, if you swipe it like that, they will allow you to do it without any questions asked up to $50. Anything above that, they will ask for your license.
I'd like to know where you shop.
Yeah,
I did it at Home Depot.
I've never had that happen.
Yeah.
Mm. Only in Vegas. When I was in Vegas, everyone asked me for my ID. I felt famous.
Wow.
Yeah.
I had an interesting happen.
Sure, here it is.
When I used the debit card at Hertz, they did say, would you mind if you ran a credit check on you? I said, yeah, fine. I don't care.
Mm-hmm.
Some other people might find that invasive, but it was kind of interesting that they said that they would do that to make a check.
So it's not a bad thing that the credit card companies are changing.
Oh, no.
And including the PIN. I think
it's a
good thing.
And I think now the PIN will protect, I'm going to imagine, it will protect all the information, whether it's a debit card or a credit card.
Yeah, however, you still have a problem because if you use your debit card and they get a hold of it and they don't have to use the PIN, right?
Well, but they have to use it. With this new one, hopefully, they will have to use it. Okay, coming back in just a minute, we're talking about these fancy electronic things that help us get our money. You carry all sorts of devices. They're all powered by electricity. We're going to find clean ways of doing that in just a moment. Well, guys, you know, the Internet Advisor that we've been doing since forever, one of the common factors of all the things we talk about that everything depends on is electricity. Although I saw just recently, I think it was that one of the major companies, I think it was Verizon, was playing with using light to transmit information at high speeds, but your initial input has to be electronic to put the bits in. So in any way you're dealing with this, you're going to be dealing with electricity all over the place. So we're delighted to have with us on our show today, Alan O'Shea. Alan is with us as representing a whole bunch of different organizations and backgrounds. But generally speaking, Alan's been around the alternative energy business for a long time. And I'm going to let him do a little bit of his own introduction to tell us what he's involved with and where he's been. Alan, welcome to the Internet Advisor.
Thank you for asking me, Foster. I appreciate the conversation and taking a little bit of time to share with your listening audience some information that might be of very good interest to them, especially if they're into energy.
Well, I think, as I was saying, we're all into energy, or sorry, energy is into us when it comes to doing... I think we all, matter of fact, those of us who were here during the blackout, remember the blackout? Mm. We all found out how much we depend on energy at that particular point. The pumps wouldn't work at the gas stations to get me home, and then when I finally did crawl home, you know, the only thing I had was flashlights, but the batteries that ran down eventually, and I think at that time I still had the old tip and, you know, the old pots, the plain old television, mm-hmm, telephone system, so I did, yeah, have a connection with that, but that was about it, and I think for 3 days, were we down for
something like that, yeah, it was 10 years ago.
Yeah, it was a long time. And Alan, in the meantime, you have been involved in working on some of those alternatives to our traditional sources of energy. What are some, I know you've been involved in solar panels and wind energy. Give us a little bit of chronicle of where you've been in this whole process of producing alternative sources of energy for us.
Sure, I would be happy to. I give you a quick thumbnail sketch of myself. I'm a Detroiter, ex-Detroiter, west side of the state, west side of the city, and actually was in business down there many years ago, and that's when I founded the American Wind Energy Association, which is now a $20 billion organization throughout the world or in the United States. So it actually was founded in Detroit.
That's fascinating.
Basement of the 6th Precinct Police Station.
No,
not
kidding.
The jail, but just the basement.
Good. This didn't come to you in the tank.
No, it didn't. I didn't have an epiphany in the behind the bars.
Lots of time to think, though.
Hey, Bruno, I just thought of something to do with batteries.
Well, I did. I did do a lot of work in the energy field down in the Detroit arena, but going through the process, the environment had a chance to move up north near Traverse City, and you know, after looking at other options, I decided that was a good bet for renewable energy and some of our energy research. So I moved up in 1976, which was quite a while ago.
Now you've been involved in solar panel production too, haven't you?
That's right. We are really excited about that. We are the first company in the state of Michigan to start again. We lost a few good companies here a couple years ago, but we are, you know, that was a hard one, especially Unisolar and Evergreen Solar.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
We started production in September, and it's been very invigorating, and it's nice to create some jobs as well.
That's exactly. Let me talk to you a little bit about that. I know that wind energy is going strong. My granddaughters are in Midland at Central Michigan University, and that was my first time going up the highway up the middle of the state there.
Gratiot County, probably.
Well, it was up that, was it?
127?
127, I think, goes straight north from Lansing, goes north. Mm-hmm. They come up above St. John's. All of a sudden, you see these they're like giants standing in the field. As far as the eye can see, these enormous towers with propellers on them, and there are huge wind farms that are up there.
And you know, a lot of times when I take 69 back and forth to Grand Rapids from Flint to pick up my kids, I'll see the individual turbine blades.
Yes.
And they are humongous.
Yeah, we see them coming through Detroit as well, down in the highways here.
Just
huge. I'm
just
curious, how far have we gotten with wind energy in the state of Michigan? Seems like it's booming here.
It is. As a matter of fact, most of the energy created to date in the renewable portfolio standard that the state has required, the 10%, has been created through wind energy. And, you know, the utilities have embraced wind because they own a lot of it, and they get a little more controlled environment. Whereas solar is, I wouldn't say, it's more decentralized.
Sure.
And believe it or not, the solar cost and solar panel prices have come really into line. We're looking at less than 10-year paybacks. For a business, down to 5 and 6 year paybacks.
Remarkable.
For solar.
Cal, you had a question.
Well, speaking of solar, I was wondering, what's happening over in Michigan in relation to what's happening over in Ontario? I know over there, there's a big encouragement to have solar installed on the top of your house. You feed back into the grid for 15 some odd years, and then after that, that investment is yours to keep, and you can continue to feed to the grid. So you're basically, you know, making money with your home as opposed to owing money on it.
Well, you know, the whole Canadian energy policy is very, very different. If you travel up the Bruce Peninsula, so you go over Blue Water Bridge at Sarnia and then go north up toward Tobermory, again, as far as the eye can see, you'll see windmills up there, wind turbines. So, but it's because of their energy policy. Does our energy policy really compare?
Well, Michigan is somewhat behind the eight ball on this. We're playing a lot of catch up, and part of that has been utility, some of it has been legislative, and some of it has just been the misnomer that we don't have any sun in Michigan, and some of the old cliches, whereas we have as much sun as Germany does, and they're doing 20-25% of their their power. So it is a lot of all of the above, I guess you would say.
Okay, so we're doing kind of catch up. We've got a little bit of political pressure. The utilities out there see this is kind of taking some of their game away. But it sounds like you're saying after that kind of crash that happened where the Chinese came in and they apparently had really cheap solar panels that they were building and shipping into this country, that kind of sabotaged or torpedoed the companies that were in the U.S. Am I right? That was part of what happened?
That's right. There's still some backlash being created because China is still a major power. But what is exciting about it is companies in Washington and California and companies like ourselves have started production, and we are working very closely with not only our states but the international market as well. So I think there's a good solid footing that's being created this time at a much lower cost. So we are very excited about that. We're installing, working with our dealers and offering product for less than $3 a watt.
Wow.
And that is
remarkable.
A few years ago, it was probably $8 or $10 a watt.
That really is exciting. Alan O'Shea, by the way, is our guest. Cal, you had a question?
Yeah, Alan, in Michigan, what percentage of the total power going onto the grid is, in fact, solar?
Well, I can give you a little estimate. This will put it in perspective. We have less than 20 megawatts of solar in the state of Michigan at this time. And in Indianapolis, at the Indianapolis airport, they're putting in 10 megawatts at the airport this year.
So how do we encourage this?
Well, we are, we have some good legislation, and Governor Snyder is taking a real serious look at renewable energy. And I think with all of the meetings, and many of us gave testimony in these meetings, I think they've come to the conclusion that there is a this is part of Michigan's independence.
Alan, hang on a second. What I want to do, we're going to take a break for just a moment. When we come back, I want you to talk to the Michigan Energy Fair that's coming up as a way of kind of gathering those forces together. Thank you for being with us. By the way, thank you for visiting engineer Jason Iavetta is with us. Annie Nichols, the our lady of the phone with a smiling face and smiling voice, is also with us here. Thank you very much, Behind the Glass, for making things worth. We're talking right now with Alan O'Shea. Alan O'Shea is involved in manufacturing solar panels. He's been involved in wind energy, alternative energy sources within our fair state of Michigan. And we've been talking about kind of the state of the affairs there. And it definitely seems to be back on the track growing. Certainly wind energy is growing. And solar seems to be kind of making a comeback and costs being contained. But it's kind of an uphill fight both legislatively and in terms of business. But Alan O'Shea, thank you again for being with us. You have a Michigan Energy Fair coming up very soon in which a lot of the players in this field are going to be getting together and I imagine doing some of the strategies.
Yes, it's a very exciting time. We've been putting the Energy Fair on for 9 years. This is the ninth year, and we've moved it to the center of the state, Ingham County near Lansing at the Mason County Fairgrounds. And this is the confluence where you have 160 solar and wind and energy efficiency vendors coming together with over 10,000 people we're expecting.
Wow.
Great speakers, programs to not only from, Energy 101 on through to political or posturing or policy making.
Right.
We're planning on giving away 10 scholarships this year to math and science students, new graduates throughout the state of Michigan. Just a lot of good things, and of course a lot of fun things too. You'll have outdoor displays, and we will have a large get together at night with some music and so forth, and a couple keynote speakers as well.
By the way, we have links at internetadvisor.net if you are interested in this field and maybe want to get your business in there or just to get in there to do some networking. The information is there. You'll be able to link in and get some early registration and things like that. And Alan, again, the date for that is going to be?
It's going to be June 27th and 8th. In Ingham County at the fairgrounds.
Okay, June 27th, 28th. Still plenty of time, but this is giving a little bit heads up on it. Just quickly, Alan, before I let go of you here, Richard Steenan was waiting to talk with us about a really powerful new virus that's out there right now. I looked at a map, a national map, and it looked like in the representations there that Michigan has got a lot, on balance, a lot of wind energy sources right now. Are we one of the bigger users of wind energy right now?
We are. As a matter of fact, the wind has been very well received. We have a good wind regime, and I just read the solar energy report out of the United States, and Michigan created 2,300 jobs in the solar energy field this year in 2013, and it was ranked 14th in the country.
Excellent.
A lot of good change taking place.
Well, Alan, thank you very much. I know you've been kind of at the cutting edge of this source of clean energy for us here in our state of Michigan, and it's kind of neat to hear that we're one of those growing points for it again. The Michigan Energy Fair is going to be taking place in the Mason County Fairgrounds. That's going to be June 27th, 28th. Again, go to internetadvisor.net, and you'll find a link there for more information. Alan, thank you again for being with us.
Yeah, that's Ingham County.
Ingham, pardon
Ingham County.
Got the right one. Ingham County Fairgrounds.
Yes, yes. Well, thank you very much, and I appreciate the opportunity to share a little bit about what's going on in Michigan.
Excellent. Thank you so much for being with us, Alan O'Shea. And by the way, he has a family business going on up there in the Traverse City area. Well, somebody we invite in from time to time and are delighted to have as a close collaborator with us is Richard Steenan, because a big news that came out this week was about a virus that's been around for a while. Now, you wouldn't necessarily have heard us talking to you about it, like the ransomware kind of thing that's going on out there, but it is a powerful virus, apparently, according to some of the studies that came out this last week. It's called the mask, or using a Spanish, as in European Spanish slang term, careto, super virus that's been on the loose. And Rich Steenan is with us. Richard, thank you so much for joining us again here.
Always great to be here. Thanks, Foster.
Thank you as well for being here. Could you give us kind of a thumbnail about this? This isn't a new, in a sense of it suddenly appeared kind of thing, or is it?
Well, newly discovered,
because it's been around since 2007. And yes, there's a virus, you know, associated with it, right? So the typical dropper and then install of Trojans. And it's actually all the way down, it's a rootkit, you know, so it's really, really hard to detect. And Kaspersky Labs, the guys who found it, only recently discovered it because they saw parts of it were trying to subvert detection via Kaspersky's antivirus software.
Ah.
And so don't think of it as a virus that spreads and does damage or anything like that. It's literally spyware. And because of the targets, Kaspersky's inferring that it's a nation state's attempt at cyber espionage, because the targets are all involved in, you know, some level of either diplomacy or government operations or think tanks,
mm-hmm.
In mostly Spanish-speaking countries.
Oh, really?
About 31 countries, and I think they found it in 380 different entities?
Yeah. So this reminds me a lot. Remember when the think tank in Canada investigated attacks that appeared to center on the Dalai Lama's offices?
Oh, yes, yes.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. And then further on, they discovered something called GhostNet, which is very similar. So the similar characteristics are a command control server that's receiving information. In the case of the mask, it's very critical information. It's SSH keys, digital certificate keys, documents, everything you've got on your computer, basically. And they're controlled by that command and control server. And what happens is the researchers get a hold of an infected machine, backtrack it to the command and control server, and that's where they learn all their information, because they can they can essentially spy on that command and control server.
But this has been going on, Richard, if I'm not wrong, that for since, what, you said 2007?
Right.
Yeah.
And just detected now.
It's just going on for 7 years, and suddenly we found it, which means it could have been doing some extensive damage. Did this come out about the same time as the Stuxnet and Flame and some of those?
Yeah, even though Kaspersky hasn't made the connection, only to say it's much more sophisticated than Dooku, which is kind of one of the Stuxnet family that Kaspersky has researched.
But again, it was very targeted like Stuxnet was, right?
Right.
And so most of us wouldn't be...
No.
You know, it wouldn't affect us. But Richard, it is interesting because there's a lot of people out there with cell phones and with Mac OSs. And they think that you can't create a virus for them. And in fact, this particular rootkit could infect Mac OSs, could affect
Mac
Androids.
And Linux.
And Linux.
Linux too.
Yeah, and Linux too. And, and Android and iOS, so the iPhone and iPad. So, I mean, you really can. And if people want to take the time to do it, they can take and infect any of those entities. And this one, in fact, did.
Rich, is this looking like a nation state cyber warfare kind of weapon?
Well, cyber espionage for sure, and it looks nation state, and it has, at least my interpretation is, so Bruce Schneier said, hey, this is evidence that Spain engages in cyber espionage.
Yeah.
But my impression is more that a nation state, China or the U.S. probably, has a team of Spanish speakers who are tasked with gathering information from Spanish speaking countries, and that team is managing all of this. And that's an indication of maturity in the cyber espionage game. And it's very similar to the carve-out that was against mostly Southeast Asian countries with the GhostNet.
Oh, I see. Okay. So it could have been the same source, same group of, if you will, cyber experts or hackers or... What do you say? Cyber espionage team.
And
that was just focusing somewhere else.
And we don't want to speculate because the NSA will then tap our phones.
They're listening closely to this conversation, probably anyway, right?
They're going to be thrilled beyond their wildest dreams with my conversation.
That's right.
Richard, what has been the response then in terms of people, places like Kaspersky and some of the other ones, about what can be done about this? I mean, are we just left to kind of observe this? Or is there something that can be done about it? Or are we going to find ourselves suddenly in the headlines being filled with blame about, oh, it must be Russia or China or us that's doing this, or Israel or somebody like that?
Yeah, evidently these guys have extremely good OPSEC, operational security. As soon as Kaspersky started investigating, they shut down the command and control servers. So they've already pulled back. However, you know, the malware is still out there.
Yeah, rootkits are still out there.
Yeah, it could be waiting for a clock to tell it to check in with a different command and control server.
Call home someplace else, right?
Yeah. So they're evading that investigation. In the meantime, what it tells, you know, people in Spanish-speaking countries who are involved in diplomacy and all that to get a lot better at security. And, of course, Kaspersky says, hey, download our software. We can identify it.
Of course.
Yeah. Well, Richard, it sounds like the hunt or the game was afoot, you know.
Absolutely.
And we're on our way. Richard, thank you so much again for being with us here. We look forward to having you in here again soon to talk about some other things, including some things that you're writing out there. So, Richard Steenan, thanks so much for being with us. Back with Mike Brennan in just a moment. Welcome back. It's the Internet Advisor, and it's that time of the show when we invite Mr. Mike Brennan in to talk about the headlines and mytechnews.com. And that is a special weekly gathering of headlines from around the state and the nation about technology and also about entrepreneurship. It's a great resource for entrepreneurs that we'll talk about a little bit. And we bring that to you through the support of our friends at ITC, the nation's largest independent electricity transmission company, serving customers throughout the Midwest. And you can find out more about them at itctransco.com. Warner, Norcross, and Judd are some other friends. Attorneys at Law, how well protected and capitalized is your intellectual property? And by the Engineering Society of Detroit, lots of friends out there. 16,000 engineers in Southeast Michigan. Mike, welcome to the show.
Always a pleasure, Foster.
Glad to have you with us here. And from snowy Western Michigan, taking a look at what's going on around us, you cast your eye back towards Michigan and to an event that's going to be taking place in Detroit here to talk about sharing a little love close to Valentine's Day here with the city of Detroit, with Terry Bean, one of the organizers of that, coming up very soon.
Yeah, there's actually four people that are involved in this, four entrepreneurs. But I want to give full credit to Terry. It's his idea, and we're working with him to develop it. He started out a year ago with just hashtag DLoveDetroit, and it trended worldwide. And so we built on that now to actually produce a live event that's going to be on March 13th at the Charles H. Wright Museum of African American History near Wayne State. And it's going to be an afternoon of speakers talking about creativity, community forgiveness, entrepreneurship, and some other topics. And then in the evening, there's going to be a reception. And that's meant to get everybody together and meeting people and talking. And who knows, some new company might come out of that.
That's all kind of networking thing. It can be a great source. And by the way, MyTech News often has a lot of these kind of things where people can get together who have shared interests and make connections. That's a great part of that. Well, another headline I saw there was that the departure of John Nixon as the director of the State Budget Office and the Department of Technology Management and Budget, he's heading to Utah. That's going to make place for someone we had recently on the show with us. David Behan is going to be
our
stepping into
the Yeah, he got kicked upstairs, and now he's the director of the DTMB. And
Department of Technology. Yeah, Department of Technology Management and Budget.
So the whole shooting match.
Yeah. Well, but he will retain, Mike, he'll retain his CIO position, right?
Yeah, he's still the CIO. He just gets a new title, and I looked at his salary. He gets like 10 grand more a year. So next time he's on the show, let's put the bite on him. What do you think?
He also gets about 20% more headaches as well with that.
A lot more than that, I'm sure.
Probably much more than that. It's good news to hear, though. Oaken University is going to be hosting. And this is kind of interesting because it's a cybersecurity summit that's coming up in the not-too-distant future at Oakland University.
Yeah, it's on March 7th, and I don't think David's going to be attending, but his right-hand man, Dan Lorman, who we've also had on the show, who's the state's chief information security officer.
Right.
These titles after a while, right? Anyway, he's going to be there. Phil Bertolini, who runs Oakland County's, he's the CIO there. He's going to be there. Other folks. And if you want to get to meet these people, hear what some of the general themes are, what's going on in cybersecurity, that's the place to be on March 7th.
Okay, good. So, folks, you see some of the things that you get with your MyTech News headlines. Be things going on around the station, probably around the nation and the country, and the world as well in technology. But we're also talking about some of these key kind of gatherings that are coming up, and you can plan ahead on your calendar, for instance, at what's coming up on March the 7th, and that's brought to you by people like ITC, the nation's largest independent electricity transmission company, and they're serving customers all throughout the Midwest. If you'd like to find out more about them, ITCTransco.com is a place to go, and Warner Norcross and Judd Attorneys at Law are also part of the people who appreciate MyTech News and help us to get it out to you, and they are people who helped you to protect and capitalize your intellectual property.
Great law firm, too.
Yeah, and if you want to get a subscription to this, don't put your hand in your wallet or start thinking about what credit card you're going to use, because it's absolutely free. And all you need to do is go to internetadvisor.net. Go down a little bit on our page. You'll see Mike's smiling face, and below that, there's a subscribe button. Click on that. It'll take you to a place where you put in your email address in, and every week on Friday, you get not just these few headlines we're talking about, but a whole bunch more that talk about everything that's happening from the top news internationally, like the viruses that are out there, this Kadetu virus, the mask virus that's out there, all the way through. And Richard Steen, by the way, who was just with us right now, is a frequent contributor through his company about security on there, to talking about individual events that are coming up for entrepreneurs in particular. So you'll find all sorts of gatherings that you can get a head start on and make sure that you put on your calendar as well if you're an entrepreneur. That's Michigan Technology News, mitechnews.com. Go there right now and see all the headlines and all the details, and you get that delivered right to you through email every week, free of charge. A great, great resource. I hope you will take advantage of that. Mike, let's wrap up by talking about, we've been talking with Alan O'Shea just recently, a 2014 Green Leaders and Future Green Leaders competition that's coming up.
Yeah, the West Michigan Sustainable Business Forum is having this contest. It'll be for 3 adults and 3 students. You get $6,000 in scholarships available. You have to have your essay, 500 to 700 words in, or your 3-minute video in by March 14th, and they judge it a month later on April 14th, or at least that's when they release the results.
Mm-hmm.
It's an opportunity to talk about, you know, what's going on in the green world, and not necessarily as in the color, but alternative energy, right, and all that jazz.
Yeah, and as we heard with Alan Lachey was talking a little bit earlier on in our program, Michigan really is on the cutting edge of this in terms of both solar and wind energy. Seeing more and more of these super long blades coming down our highways and then showing up as these incredible wind farms that stretch from horizon to horizon in the state of Michigan. It's exciting to see that grow. We may not have sun all the time, but we got lots of wind.
Yeah, especially in the thumb area. If you get up in that area, the central part of the state, thumb area, there's wind farms all over the place.
Right. That's one of the things that we are really, because of the lakes, the difference in temperatures and the land, we have a lot of weather vectors that are crossing our state, which make for a great resource there. Well, Mike, thank you for putting together all of these sources in your MI Tech News report for this week, and we hope that folks will take advantage of that. Absolutely free, mitechnews.com. Mike Brennan, have a good week.
Thanks, Gary. Thanks, Foster.
All right, guys. Good to have you with us. Great resource, guys. Hey, a couple of headlines I wanted to check back with you on. Did you see that I found it kind of interesting that Windows 8 finally hit the 200 million mark. And apparently about the same time, Windows 7 had hit the 300 million mark in terms of the sales
vectors. Yeah, I saw
that
article, yeah.
Yeah, so what you have to realize is Windows 7 was a business OS that most of the businesses adopted. Windows 8 was such a big departure from Windows 7, was really kind of moving toward that the tablet-oriented interface that most businesses, at least not initially, will adopt it. So I think that's the difference. More of a consumer upgrade.
No, right? Gary's absolutely right. As always, took the words right out of my mouth.
Well, I was just going to say,
still, 200 million is about what, 2/3 of the United States.
200 million is nothing to sneeze at. Yeah. And you figure that the Windows 7 at the same time it hits 300 million, again, because the focus was on businesses. Yep. And it was such a good upgrade from Vista, where it had been fraught with so many problems. It solved so many problems for businesses. I think they said, finally, we got something.
And that's what business usually does, is skip every other one. The majority of the big businesses, anyway.
And they're talking about Windows 9 as being something that will make that
another big one where the businesses will jump in.
Although Windows 8.1, the update that's coming out, apparently is going to make kind of an effort to help enterprise, because you can now boot directly. And last week we talked about that.
Yep.
You can boot directly into the...
Yep, and I downloaded that and tested it. It works just fine.
And that's the ability to boot directly in Windows 8 into the desktop.
Into the classic desktop, right.
The classic desktop look. Hey, folks, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back this next hour, we're going to be focusing on your questions that you sent us and talking about getting some solutions for you as well. So, Gary and Cal and Ed and I will be pitching in on that. I hope you stick around for that. And if you have a question for us, simply go to internetadvisor.net and you'll see the Contact Us button. Click on that, put your name in there, your phone number, and give us a contact and give us your question. We will get them solved for you.
You're listening to a podcast of the Internet Advisor. To see the show notes for this program, visit our homepage at www.internetadvisor.net. That's where you'll also find past podcasts, our toolkit full of free software to clean up your computer and keep it running strong, plus other resources. If you have a question for our hosts, just click the contact form on the homepage and send us an email with the details. Don't forget to look for us on Facebook. Now let's get back to the second hour of the Internet Advisor.
Welcome to hour number two of the Internet Advisor. I'm Foster Brown, the co-host for the program, and this is when we get our tech experts to put it into high gear. Cal Carson and Ed Riddell here in studio are techs, are super techs with GM, and have been for many years helping out with tech problems. And Gary Baker, of course, for the last 16 years has been starting off helping me with problems with my ISP, and we've gone on to help many, many other people since then as well. So we're going to be taking your questions that you've emailed to us and finding some answers for you in just a moment. Welcome to this second hour of the Internet Advisor. If this is the first one you happen to bump into, we're glad to have you aboard. This is the time when we focus the show on your questions. Kind of the hallmark of our program for the last 16 years has been that we dedicate a part of it, at least, to just kind of getting in touch with you and finding out what you, the users and listeners, have as a regular problem that you're running into. And we're going to get to those in just a moment. Cal, you were talking about a headline during the break, which is kind of an interesting one in terms of a change in execution by Microsoft that's going to have an impact on an Apple device.
Oh, you're talking to me. How nice. No, I'm just kidding. Yes, there's a rumor out that they're going to have Microsoft Office, the suite of productivity tools, available for the iPad. And the rumor says that it may be sometime during the first half of 2014.
Well, and actually, even Steve Ballmer had said that they would have it out, but it was going to be later on in 2014. And now the rumor is they're going to bring it into the, maybe the second quarter.
See, I thought he said when hell freezes over, but I must have misheard that.
Well, if he's been in Michigan any time the last couple of months, I think we're pretty much close.
Yeah, I was just going to say, that's happened.
Now, my question on that, Cal, I don't know if you have the article in front of you, but
yes, I do.
Because right now, on an iPad, can't you access the cloud-based
version
Windows?
Of iWork?
Yes, iWork.
Yes. Yeah. And with using iWork.
No, pardon me, not iWork, but I mean of the Apple, Microsoft Office. Can't you get access to that through
you tell like 360?
You know, I don't think so.
Yeah. I don't think so either.
I don't think so.
If you can, let me know. I'd love to do it.
Okay, so that will be it then. It'll be access to the cloud-based. For instance, yeah. When I go
currently, you can get the cloud-based version of iWork, which is Pages, Numbers,
that's
and
Apple's
Keynote,
version. Yes,
which is Apple's version of Word, Excel, and PowerPoint.
And it's kind of like that. There's an arena there, and this is kind of interesting. I was reading some other stuff that ties into this. That these are the cloud-based utility suites. For instance, Google has got its Google Docs up there, and a lot of people have been going up there with Google Docs and using the calendar, for instance, and things like that. So with their Chromebooks, they're pushing people to the cloud to get to these office, their office suite, if you will. Now, Microsoft is coming in to make theirs accessible across the board.
Now, what I'm wondering is Microsoft going to do the same thing that Apple did? And that is, like, if you buy a Surface, will you automatically get the cloud-based version of Office, the touch version for their tablet, free with the purchase
of
the machine?
That's my question, too.
And as an iPad user, the fact that Pages and Numbers and Keynote all will save in Word, Excel, and PowerPoint formats, I would never go out and buy that, you know, because I'm getting it for free.
Yeah, but they're not quite the same, right?
Well, so then let the people on the other end fix their deficiencies in their program and everything will be fine.
It depends on which side of the river you're standing on.
You know what it boils down to? It boils down who is making the where's the money flowing? Which direction?
And I think that what Microsoft is seeing is the need to make their Office suite accessible to everybody.
Right.
Yeah, because eventually everybody
uses it. That's why business uses it. Eventually, because that's where the money is.
Well,
right?
Yeah. A lot of the business, but it depends on which faction. If you get into the side of the business that's more marketing, more design,
where Apple has been strong,
media and stuff like that, you'll probably see that they'll use the other side of the coin. But what's important is that eventually, somewhere down the road, Chrome and Apple and Microsoft and all these suites that are being developed, this is going to have to eventually turn into one standard for documents.
Right. I think Microsoft is already there with that. Because, for instance, even iWorks will translate into... Well, most of us have started out with that, at least.
Well, Microsoft has set the standard.
Yes.
But I think we need to have what I would lightly call an internet standard. This is how this document looks, if it's a Word
document. Of the other things I've been reading, too. Like, for instance, there were 1 billion smartphones were sold. And with that, you've got the whole mobile segment now that's out there where more and more productivity. Gary's working on his Surface Pro. I've got the Surface 2 here. People are carrying iPads around with keyboards, you know. So more and more you're seeing that as a factor coming in now. So it's not just that you've got, you know, billions of desktops around the world that focus on the usual Microsoft suite, the Office program, and all those other factors, but you now have this mobile area. Mm-hmm. And that's where I think, you know, the access to Office 365 in the cloud and to Chrome and things like that are important. I'm interested, the two of you guys, as you're servicing executives at GM, do you find that growing, that mobile segment of devices that you're working on for them?
Oh, you can work on their PCs, but do not take their phones, their smartphones. Absolutely.
Yeah. Smartphones, big.
And all of them,
tablets?
All of them want tablets. Mm. The price issues with tablets and budgets for IT and stuff like that are such that it's keeping them from getting them as soon as they want to. But I'm sure
but they could do personal purchases.
And then
connect them to corporate infrastructure. And then that's the decision they have to make as individuals.
Yeah. Yep.
And some companies will just allow them to bring your own device. Right?
Yeah, BYOD.
Which is similar to what he just said.
Other companies won't. Well, that's a point.
But Gary brings up a good point. A lot of corporations had to, if you will, beef up their security. And their infrastructure to accommodate bring your own device.
Mm-hmm. So the people could... Well, they have to use VPNs to connect then in order to be safe connecting to the mothership?
Generally, that's the desired path to do because that is a secure tunnel for moving
VPN
data back
being
forth.
Virtual private network.
Yes.
Or you'd use a virtual machine like a Citrix or VMware.
Like that. Right.
But so, something that's highly secured as opposed to your normal just
I was just wondering, as you two guys tech, you find yourself servicing those kind of devices more and more now.
All the time.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. And that's a growing edge of this.
Great
okay.
time.
Coming back in just a minute, we're going to talk about, matter of fact, we've got a listener we're going to be talking with, Gerald. He's having a problem with a Mac device. So, Cal, step up, get in the batter's box. We're ready to answer those questions in just a moment here on the Internet Advisor. This is where the rubber meets the road, as they say in car talk. But in this particular case is where the bits meet the techs. And that's where we get the collective brain power of our technology experts here. Ed Riddell, Cal Carson, and Gary Baker, and we tackle some problems. And today we're delighted to have one of our folks who has written in with a concern, Gerald, with us. And Gerald, welcome to the Internet Advisor.
And thank you for taking my call.
Glad to have you with us as well. Apparently you have a Mac 27-inch iMac. That's a beautiful machine. What year is that? What year is that?
It's only about 3 months old.
Oh, it's a brand new one. Those are gorgeous, too.
Yeah.
That's a 2013. Nice.
Right.
Okay,
2013
now, or so. You're saying in your note here that you plan on downloading Bootcamp. And for people go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Well, Bootcamp is apparently free with the system.
Yes, it's part of there, right? Mm-hmm.
Right. And what happens when I do my trading on my Fidelity IRA account, unfortunately, the Safari does not work with the system. So the IT people at Fidelity said the only way this thing works, you have to download Firefox, which I did.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have to download Microsoft Silverlight. Unfortunately, I'm in the middle of a trade a couple weeks ago. And Silverlight crashed 8 days in a row for me.
Ooh.
Every day it's crashing, and it tells you, it just says Microsoft Silverlight crashes, so you send it back to Microsoft for their review. So they recommended to possibly get in Bootcamp and not Parallels, because Parallels will run the both programs at the same time, maybe one in the background, and that'll slow the machine down. So they recommended Bootcamp and also... To get Windows Home Premium, but the 7, but not the 8 or 8.1, because 8 and 8.1 does not work on this system.
Hmm.
It will lock up also. They've had so many people with 8 and 8.1 also having the same problem.
It's really
so
buggy. Yeah.
They need to get their system fixed, right?
Yeah.
Well, let me jump in here and ask you a question before we even start playing with anything technical. How critical is it that you be able to handle this trading situation? Is this occupation, or are you like a casual trader?
No, I'm a day trader because I retired 7 years ago, and I've been day trading and learning the system.
So you're doing this. So you're doing this at, more as an avocation. This is real serious stuff.
It gets pretty serious. Yeah, when you're dealing with tens of thousands of dollars. So.
It's your money.
Okay.
Yeah, that's for sure within your IRA account. So you want to make sure you don't lose. Especially if you're in the middle of a trade, boy, you can use like tens of thousands of dollars if this system fails. So it cannot fail.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right.
I'm thinking, this is me just thinking out of the box. You tell me if I'm way off base. You're doing something that I think is considered critical, and you want to make sure that you have a regular system that's going to be responsive to you so you can make your trades in a timely fashion and get all the information that you need.
That's correct.
I don't think you going to a boot camp situation is the way to go. I think you'd be better off spending a few bucks, maybe on a laptop computer, getting it with Windows 7 already on it, and doing your trading on that machine.
Well, what I was thinking of doing is I was thinking of either building my system with the new that i7, see what they call that, i7 chip now.
Right, right.
And the three video cards, I'm thinking about three, at least two 32-inch monitors, but maybe three. And they have to have HDMI output.
Yeah.
It's got to be 1080p and right. also 240 refresh rate.
I think that's a better way for
you're going
to
create your own Wall Street.
I think that's the better way to go, considering you're dealing with that critical situation. Now, if the Fidelity program would run efficiently on a Mac platform, then I would say, yeah, run it on the Mac platform, get you three Lightning monitors, hook them up in series on there, and you'd be in Fat City. But from what you're telling me, I think you'd be better served if you do that on a Windows platform.
So,
and then, yes, and then you know, the other thing, too, was, like you mentioned, too, see the on the Windows system, you can actually download Fidelity. It's about a 60 megabyte program.
Yeah, right.
And it becomes on your system.
Right.
Now in the Apple world, you can't download that program. What happens is the Apple desktop or your laptop becomes a slave, and their system becomes a master. So you really rely on that slow process going from your slave to their master. And they tell me that it is slower. So, but they said the downloadable version on the Windows 7 is extremely fast.
Okay, yeah. And this is where – I'm sorry, Gary. You're going to try to make
a point. I was just going to say, Gerald, this ties you to your desk.
That's correct.
So if you're retired, you'll probably be at times someplace other than your desk.
That's possible, yes.
And wouldn't you want to be able to trade there, too, like if you're spending some time elsewhere?
But if he's the type of trader that I think he is, Gary, he needs multiple screens, and being able to do that multiple screen trading on a laptop is not going to
I don't think Gary's suggesting it doing it on a laptop, but using the laptop in place of a desktop.
Right.
Right.
And then you could
But he needs three video cards.
It doesn't, well...
You can get by with two. I mean, most laptops will support at least two, the laptop itself and an external monitor.
Okay.
And I'm just saying, if you have your heart set on three,
the
then...
Fidelity system that I use, I can do on a laptop. Now,
But you're not day trading anywhere near the way he's doing it.
I'm not day trading.
Because I know someone like him.
It's not perfect, but it's available when I'm not at my desk.
Okay, but can I ask you now? See, I do what they call Active Trader Pro, which is the high-end series. Mm-hmm. You can do Fidelity.com, which is own, but you don't have access to all those charts.
No, I understand.
Streaming and everything.
No, I understand.
So it's a totally different system.
Yep.
Well, no, it. But I think what Gary is kind of saying, and maybe we're offering you as an option as well, is that your base machine could be a very good laptop. But
hook it up to the monitors most often, except when... you're not there.
Separation of church and state. When you're on vacation, leave the stock stuff at home. Spend the money and enjoy it. Don't
so
take
what you're
it
saying,
with
there's,
you.
There's, what you're saying, there's laptops, maybe the i7 chip?
Can
run two video outputs?
Yeah, and then what you do is you can use the monitors, right? And you'll use those most often because you'll be at home most often. It's just when you're not.
And then you're
if you're going to, if there's going to be some volatility, like you could see a week ago that this last week there was going to be some volatility, you're going to want to be trading. So you're not going to be able to go on vacation when you want to sometimes. And I'm thinking, go on vacation and still trade when you need to.
But
so that was all I was thinking was could take and close it, set it down and let it be. You can buy a really nice laptop, and it doesn't cost very much more than the desktop.
Let's say, for instance, if you want to do a desktop, it sounds like you're bold enough to build your own outfit, right, Gerald?
I'm just learning on the system right now. I've been going to that, Egghead had a two-hour video the other night.
Huh.
On how to build it's a really great video. I mean, really intense.
Listen, it sounds like you've got the time on your hands and the money to do it, and have fun with it. No, it's really seriously.
Okay.
Have fun.
But the one thing I wanted to bring back up is the original question was that on an Apple device, on a Mac, Cal, are you aware of other people that have had problems with doing day trading with their Mac device?
I know people who are doing day trading, and they're doing it on an Apple machine, and they're doing it just fine.
Oh, okay, good.
But, you know, different software packages do different things. They may be doing it through Schwab or something like that, or they're doing it through the web. So different people are doing it different ways.
Gotcha.
From what he's describing to me, he's on the real high end of that day trading game, and he needs to dedicate himself.
Now, I'm imagining kind of like a NASA center here with, you know, wall size screens. You're talking about 32-inch monitors. My goodness,
the only thing,
4K.
The only accessory he needs to go with the thing he's going to set up is a little bitty chair sitting behind it, a stool that I can watch what he's trading.
Now, Gerald, I'm,
my wife will make the apple pie, and we have a coffee ready for you guys.
There you go. There you go.
Great.
I'm curious about, guys, when you have these bigger monitors, do you need video cards that will specifically have the juice to be able to run those, or they pretty much have onboard power?
It depends on what you're doing with
them.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, and I will tell you that I know a lot of people that run Parallels or more, actually, VMware, and you don't see the degradation.
Not at all.
Right.
Okay.
So I wouldn't use Bootcamp if you're going to stay. Your original question, I use VMware.
Yep. Okay, Gerald, hope we've helped you out with that. Thanks so much.
Okay, I'll call you back in a month or two to let you know how you come on.
Great. Foster Brown here, the co-host of the program, reminding you, by the way, that InternetAdvisor.net is a resource that's there for you 24/7. You have access there to our podcasts. You can go back and find a topic that you have interest in. You can search, by the way, our podcast database is completely searchable, so you can have a name of a person or a topic and be able to find the show and listen to a segment in that. You can also go to our toolkit and find some great resources. Pardon me, I just went there recently to download a free version of CCleaner. I couldn't find the free version anywhere, even when I went through Google. You always get the kind of things that are, sadly nowadays, part of a download package where they download all sorts of garbage. Their special downloader, and that comes with toolbars and all sorts of just horrible stuff. And Ed...
It's called Free Enterprise America.
Yeah, ain't that. But the nice thing about what Ed has got links to in Toolkit is that those are things that will take you straight to, for instance, CCleaner, and you download that and not a whole bunch of other junk with it. So those are all resources that are available there in our toolkit that Ed has spent a lot of time putting in and refining. Shane has added some things to that as well, his virus prevention package. And so there's lots of great resources at InternetAdvisor.net. And by the way, we also have a Facebook page where on throughout the week, as I find interesting articles, I load them directly in there. So you'll find things popping up on, well, the credit cards we talked about before, the changes that are coming to them, and some of the other things that are going on.
And Foster, can we still get the podcast off iTunes as well?
Yes, you can still subscribe to the podcast on iTunes as well. Thank you. Yep. That's over to your door.
You know, every day I carpool from Ortonville to Detroit, and the lady I carpool with goes, you know, I went to that Internet Advisor website you were telling me about, and I downloaded that CCleaner, you know, in your toolkit, and she's telling me how much it sped up her computer. Because... one of the reasons I always liked CCleaner because it cleaned up, you know, temporary internet files and Microsoft log files
and it was easy to
patches.
Use,
and
very
easy to use. But when Shane Hamlin mentioned about how good the registry editor, the registry editor, but the registry cleaner
this,
actually worked, I was always hesitant about recommending a registry cleaner.
Right.
But now that it's in a trusted tool and always has been. And he uses it on a daily basis and has never really, if you will, messed up a computer with it.
Right, right.
That's all the endorsement I need,
yeah.
And I recommend that to all my friends.
And I was just telling the guys that one of the reasons that I go to what you've got links to at the toolkit is you get a trusted download.
Yes.
Because I found just recently I went looking for CCleaner, and I didn't go into the toolkit, and I thought, I'll find something. Could not find something that wasn't tied to a lot of junk.
Yeah.
And so when you go into the toolkit, you'll find a clean version of it. Hey, guys, we've got somebody with us on the phone right now. Diane is with us. And when I looked at Diane's email, the first words that I saw were, I inherited, in quotes, an HP PC computer with Vista installed. And I love that because I thought there are so many people out there who have inherited those older machines.
Who doesn't like you, Diane?
Well, our PC crashed with XP. And I bought a new laptop.
But okay.
So we have this PC, might as well be trying to use it. And,
sure.
And I solved my problem with the printer. I also had a question on a printer that I couldn't print from this Vista, so Vista does not support my old disk jet printer, so that that solved that problem.
Okay.
So I'm babying my old laptop so I can do some printing.
So what questions remained?
Okay, I'm going around in loops. I'm trying to install Windows, and I keep getting the Windows update, 23 Windows updates. So I try to install them. uploaded them, mm-hmm. but they wouldn't install. So I could code 800-70643, 643, and 802-46002. And then they said they're creating a restore point, which sort of triggered another question for me.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And then, so I went into the little areas where they tell you to troubleshoot. Well, that sent me into a loop. And then they said, well, if this doesn't answer your question, go on to the web. So I went on to the web, and the web, of course, tells you to go to Windows Update Troubleshooter.
Right.
That file is unknown. So I mean, but when I went back looking at their creating a restore point, should I be maybe a restore point is what's needed here?
Well, no, a restore point is basically Microsoft is taking the operating system is taking a snapshot.
Right, but should I go back to an old point?
Well, if you do, then it'll undo all the security updates that have installed successfully.
But what's really happening is they're trying to put in a restore point just before you do this upgrade, right?
Yeah, in case something
so
really
just,
bad happens.
That's just a really good thing for the operating system to do and let it do it.
Right. And what's happening is that the security update is failing, obviously, and nothing bad's happening. It's basically saying this security update has failed to
just
install.
Didn't put in.
And it just failed. It didn't damage your computer. It failed. And you're right. It can be very hairy trying to follow the wonderful world of Microsoft error messages and those obscure numbers that they give you.
Oh, yeah.
And now Microsoft has improved by creating Microsoft Fix-Its.
Yes.
That will attempt to fix it.
Mr. Fix-It, it says. It's got a little man with it. You click on that, and it essentially does the job for you, right?
Well, they should have made it. Yeah, okay. I won't go
where
there.
Do you find that?
Yeah, well, no, not always.
Not always.
Well, because it tells you go to the settings on the update screen. So I went to settings, and mm-hmm. change PC settings. But, you know,
they could be very difficult to find out. What you need to do is find out, with that error message, if you go to the Bing.com, and it sounds like you've done this, or report a problem, you know, report to Microsoft about an error, which usually is a dialog box that this security update failed. Would you like to report the issue? And when you select yes, it comes back and it says, here's the article. Did you try this? And it sounds like you've gone through that.
Right, but I read some articles. Right.
Sometimes I just go to Bing and I say Windows Vista and then I type in the error message, 8003572, or whatever it is.
Okay.
And then, you know, how to repair this damn thing, you know.
But Bing is different than, I Googled it.
Oh, you
so
can
Bing
Google.
Would be different.
You could Google it,
same
too.
Thing,
but, you know, I use Bing on Microsoft error messages because it seems like better results.
Okay.
And you may not find the answer
Bing,
to this.
Bing is the Microsoft search.
Right.
That's, you know.
Good point, Gary. Yeah.
Yep. It's just Microsoft search.
And I've had a hard time with this, too. I've had a hard time fixing this.
Now, guys, Diane also says that in her email, she plans on buying a new computer and printer when her cartridges, which are the most expensive part of the printer, by the way. No, but that's the most expensive part.
Yeah,
I would do the same, by the way.
Yeah, yeah.
So yeah, I think you're doing it right there.
Right.
But the reason we teased you at the beginning when we first had you on was that we were saying, you know, who doesn't like you because they gave you a Vista operating system? Vista operating systems it was not an operating system that Microsoft should have released, right?
Yeah, right.
Okay,
I wouldn't go that far because I actually use a Vista machine once in a while, and it seems to do what I want it to do.
It's okay.
It's not ME.
No.
Right. It's better than ME.
Right.
Go ahead. I'm sorry to interrupt.
No.
What happens if I don't? If these updates don't get installed.
Well, I mean, it depends what they are. You might have to research.
How long are you going to go without, before you buy the new one?
Oh, maybe just 6 months to a year.
Yeah.
Well,
because
Diane, what you can do,
for instance, I was in Micro Center just recently, just kind of snooping around, and it's a vendor in Madison Heights that we often talk about, but I think there was a refurbished desktop that they had there with like an i5 on it or something like that, running Windows 7 for, it may have been $280 or $300,
like
and essentially you've got it all there, and that's just bottom line. It's you've got all the things you need to probably run the programs you want, and then you want to make sure that you use the Eddie. What is it? The transfer wizard? The
when Microsoft's file transfer wizard. Yes.
Yeah, and then what you do is when you get that new machine in, you have cables. I think you put between the two machines. Am I right?
Well, if it's on the same network,
it's on the same network. They can do the same thing.
Yeah. You know what I told my son, because he had a laptop that failed when he was at college, and we sent him another one through Amazon that I got a good deal. I actually told him to power up both laptops with a network cable that, you know, we all get with our cable modems. Instead of buying those link cables for another $19, that you power up both computers with a network cable interconnected between the two computers. The RJ45s like the...
Right.
You power it up. You run the transfer wizard. Microsoft is set up. That's one of the first things it looks for.
Right.
Does it automatically.
It does it automatically.
And it doesn't have to be a crossover
and it runs
cable.
At a gigabyte.
Yeah.
Yeah. How
nice.
Can you 1.21 gigawatts? You know
what I mean? that would go from a dead computer.
No, not a dead computer, but from a computer that's running Vista. And if you did eventually buy a Windows 8 laptop or a new laptop with Windows 7, it transfers all your files and settings and pictures from one computer to another.
Pictures.
Okay.
If you were going to do this in the next, say, three, four months, I'd say. Get the new computer. Don't do anything right now. Get the new computer and do it then.
Yeah,
just move off of Vista, move on to a new PC.
Well, it really depends on the security update. I would look at to see what the update was, and if it's basically a Microsoft Works security update, which I have on my wife's father's computer, it always tries to update Microsoft Works with the security update. He's not even running Microsoft Works.
I don't even use Works.
Right. There
exactly.
you go. Don't worry about it.
Use a little common sense on those. Oh, and by the way, a Windows 7 update for Vista is only $65.
Okay.
So that's another option.
That's another option
it
for
is.
You. That would take
you
away. Okay? Diane, let us know what you decide, okay?
Okay.
All right. Thanks so much for giving us a call. Bye-bye. And back with more. It's so good that you've been with us for this ride. I love this part of the program where we tackle your problems, and especially when we get to talk with you, because it's a lot of fun connecting with our listeners.
Haven't you ever noticed that the person that loves this part of the program does less answering of the questions? Never mind.
Listen, I like seeing you guys do a little bit of work around here.
He lets us talk, and then he does the snarky comments back to us.
There you go.
Isn't that
fun?
It's the other way around.
The first hour is usually the other way around. That's exactly it. Okay, in this hour, we've been answering some of the questions people have sent in. So if you'd like to do the same, whether you're listening to us on one of our affiliate stations, then we'd love to hear from you with the questions you have out there, Muskegon, Kalamazoo, Bay City,
Grand
Lansing,
Rapids,
Grand Rapids, wherever you happen to be. Please go to internetadvisor.net, click on that Contact Us button, and then just fill in the information and your question, and boom, we'll get to you. And if we can, we'll give you a call back, even on these programs that are not aired live on WJR, but are part of the network here. We'd love to do that for you. So, guys, we had some other questions that came in, and one of them was kind of interesting because Paul Anderson wrote to us about a cell phone issue, or smartphone, I should say. He said, my Android stopped connection to Hotmail a week ago. I'm not sure why. I ended up removing the Hotmail account and adding it back, and now it has been in sync mode for a couple of days. Obviously not working. Do you have any suggestions about that? And he said, I'm wondering if Hotmail is blocking my Android from accessing my email. Sprint is the carrier, and they don't seem to know why. Ed, some thoughts?
Two or three things. First, try it using a web browser on a PC. Try the username and password. And if it's been 6 months, a year, change the password. Because when you go through the change password sequence, more than likely Microsoft, if you've had a Hotmail account long enough, it's probably time for you to review your secret answers and questions and answers. So if you ever do have problems, or your account is ever hijacked, you can answer your secret questions and answers to reset your password if you get locked out because someone's hacking into it. So that's just good common practice, and it'll troubleshoot your problem.
And for, don't do that for extra security. They have with that dual access where you not only put your password in, but then they'll ask you a security question like there's two things sometimes.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Dual identification.
Yeah, dual identification. yes, and I'm not sure if the email client on the Android supports that.
Okay.
So first, use a web browser, confirm your security settings.
So go back to Hotmail at the root
and
get things straightened out there so you know it's working there.
Right.
Once you know it's working there,
then in the Android, remove your account again through I'm not sure what mail application, but I have two suggestions. One, in the Android, you can usually go into the settings and then
One of the tabs, I believe, is accounts.
Yes.
And then you can go in there and you scroll down to the mail application. You can clear the cache.
Ah, very good.
That because if you, even though you moved your account, they may have cached information.
Right. With each application in Android, you have that you have that option. Scroll down far enough, by the way.
Yep.
Then you'll see the clear the cache.
Yes. If, once you find that each application usually has that feature. But I believe on the Androids, if you power them up with the volume button up and the power button simultaneously, it gives you the ability to boot your Android in a special mode where it says clean cache. As well.
Oh.
Okay, because it is an intelligent boot device and it gives you the ability to reflash it and stuff like that.
Okay.
But you just want to clear cache. I did this with my son with his tablet. It's an Android device. And that seemed to correct a lot of issues.
So just to explain to people, clear cache means to
delete,
flush the system.
Temporary files that are stored on there.
Right.
And sometimes cached credentials. The other thing I would try is go into the Google the Google Play Store and see if you could find an alternate free mail client. And just download it temporarily, and then I don't have a suggestion. So look for a free email client or something within the Google Play Store, and then find it, download that, install it, and then enter in your Hotmail credentials that way.
And see if it works
And see if it works, and see if it's the native client or not.
Very good.
And then, of course, I have too many, because this is what I would do when I would troubleshoot. Turn Wi-Fi on, try to your home hotspot, and skip Verizon or Sprint all together and use your Wi-Fi and see if that potentially could make up.
You can troubleshoot where the problem is then, where the Sprint system works.
Whether or not your data access, maybe you've reached your limit for the month, or maybe you're being throttled because you watch too many videos, right?
I
mean, we got this net neutrality going on, but we also have our carriers that
that's
are doing
dying
throttling.
An ignominious death right now.
Yes.
All right. Cal, any other thoughts to add to that?
Absolutely not, nothing at all. Ed, you know, he went down the full list of things that I would have done, and I think he's covered quite comprehensively.
The cash part,
here's,
I like.
Here's your $5, Cal. You're welcome.
The cash part is something that I hadn't thought of, but it's very true. You can change all the things you want, but it's like if the memory is still there and it's got the old password or whatever is the access point that you go in, it could be following you up.
And sometimes just shutting down your unit after you remove the account and powering it up, as Gary says, sometimes cycling the power on your either your PC or your smartphone will accomplish
And, you know, Cal, I've been doing that with both my MacBook Pro and with my iPhone, too. And it has been helping to do that complete shutdown and reboot.
You got to do it every now and then. I mean, I know people who think that they can sleep a laptop and open it up and never, ever boot it again. And it just doesn't work that way.
You know, and we have people that do that because of the security updates. I'm tired of the security updates, and they'll have accrued a large number of security updates for a month or two because they've been sleeping in their computer and they never restart their computer. That can be bad.
I don't know. With Windows 8, by the way, very often when you go on, it will tell you under the options there when you go down to restart, it says we have something to install here, so reboot. And it will install these particular things. Hey, Cal, you were talking offline about this with Gary before. I had a question come in from Phil, and he says, we have a website on a Yahoo server. We had it there for many years. And a couple of weeks ago, it and our associated email addresses disappeared. My good friend, an IT person for the past 30 years, passed away recently, and our attempts to find anyone at Yahoo could help have been pretty fruitless. It appears you cannot talk to anyone there for help. No humans allowed. Please help us if you can. I'd be willing to contract someone to locate and restore our website. We've already hired someone that moved our email addresses and restored them, but he is unable to help with the website. And he gives the name of their particular it's called Perfect Water. We do have a downloadable copy of the site, but we're told it had Yahoo code in it. So he was unable to help us. So he'd like you to see if you can help him at his Perfect Water company. What are your thoughts?
Well, you know, I had a client with a similar situation as this, and me and Gary were talking about it. And, you know, okay, yeah, it's a plug. I'm going to go ahead and do it. But Steve Heyer with his
IGD Solutions.
IGD Solutions, who manages
the Internet
Advisor's website. That's the sort of people you want to get in contact with because they know the business. They know what's going on out there. If there is some specific, quote, Yahoo code to it, they can either know how to handle that particular code or at least be able to help them with people who can redo that code so it's more universal for their particular site.
What do you think may have happened? Do you think the site was their register? What do you call that, a register? They may have expired?
Yeah, so, no, you can get to the site. And what he needs to know is you need to go to, first of all, he is the owner of the site. I just looked him up on Whois.
Oh, good. Oh, good.
Right?
Okay.
So his contact information is all there. So he is the owner. He can contact. It's now the technical contact is out of Canada. I don't know why that is, but he does. He knows who he contracted with, and that may be the gentleman that died.
I think so, yeah.
But he can, as the owner, he can contact Yahoo and then have it moved. If he wants to move it to IDG Solutions, he could do that. But I would contact somebody that could help him, like a Steve Heyer, right, or one of his folks.
Yeah, because I'm sure Steve would have had to deal with yet another customer that's having difficulty contacting someone at Yahoo.
Right.
Let's move them to someone that's a little more professional.
And they know how to do that.
And they know who to contact.
Yeah, they go right to the technical source. They'll get it moved over to a different server, and then they can help him do what.
And this is another example. You get a lot of free services out there.
Right.
And he's had a tech who helped him for 30 years, unfortunately, who died. But this is a really good reason why going to somebody like IGD Solutions, where they handle small businesses,
right,
they have the resources.
And they'll know
exactly where to cut those corners.
Yep.
So, Phil, we hope that you'll do that, that you'll get in touch with them. We'll get back in touch with you and make sure that you know about that solution as well.
Yep.
Thank you, folks, for doing this, for getting in touch with us and sending us these problems so we can help not only these individuals like Phil, but a lot of other people who have these kind of questions. Again, go to InternetAdvisor.net. Click on the Contact Us button, and it takes you right there. And visit us on Facebook at Internet Advisor as well. We've got lots of good information there for you. It's always good to meet you there as well. This is Foster Brown for Gary Baker, Ed Riddell, and Cal Carson saying, see you next week.
You've been listening to a podcast of the Internet Advisor Show, Detroit's longest-running, locally-produced computer show with Foster Brown, Gary Baker, and their team of experts. For more information about our weekly show, to ask a question of our experts, or to find the show notes for this podcast, visit www.internetadvisor.net and look for us on Facebook. Thanks for listening.